Thank you for working out all of the technical stuff. We have Commissioner Ward joining us online. Thank you for being here, Commissioner Ward, with us online.
Thank you.
Thank you for the public being here and joining us tonight. We are glad to always see public input and faces here with us. Always glad to have you. If there are any public comments that are not pertaining to one of the items on the agenda, now would be the time to come and give us your comment if you had something that you wanted to tell the commission. If not, we will move into agenda item 3, appointment of chair and vice chair for the Planning Commission for the 2025 year, and discussion amongst the commissioners of that appointment.
I'd like to nominate Commissioner Larson as our chair for the next year.
Second. Commissioner Marsh, second.
Thank you. I accept that nomination. Any comment on the nomination and motion? All in favor say aye.
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 Aye. And any opposed? All right, chair passes, and we will move on to nomination of vice chair.
This is Commissioner Jorgensen. I offer a motion to appoint Bill Ward as the vice chair.
Commissioner Marsh, second.
Thank you. Commissioner Ward, do you accept that nomination?
I do.
Okay, any discussion among the commission? All in favor say aye.
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 Aye. Aye. And any opposed? And vice chair passes also. Great, thank you. All right, we will move into agenda item number 4, the public hearing for consideration of a general development plan for Amberlea Place subdivision located at 979 North Amberlea Drive. We have the applicant as Jackson Haslam, and are you here? Do we have it? Great, thank you for being here, and we will turn the time over to Mackenzie.
Thank you, Chair Larson. This is a general development plan for 979 North Amberlea. A little bit of a reminder, when we are doing plan district rezones and these types of subdivisions, we do a general development plan, which is essentially a concept plan, where we do the public hearing and go through all these steps before the applicant does formal engineering and spends that money to see if this is even something the city will support. So this is the primary step here. A little bit of history about this property. It was left over as part of the Foxborough development. It has sat vacant for years, owned by the LDS Church. I know that at some point that was the plan for this property, and over the years nothing has happened, and I believe there's a church just north of this, so they have put it up for sale on the market, and Ivory Development has got it potentially under contract or working towards that. They do have support of the church to put forth this application. This property was rezoned with the entire Foxborough P District. And in 2008, the church asked to repeal it out of or take it out of that development agreement. At the time, it was called a conditional use permit, hence that comment in the packet. I just wanted to make sure in the future we know what we're talking about here. So it came through as Amendment 3 to the development agreement, removing this parcel out. And at that time, the parcel should have been reverted back to the zoning that it was before, which was general commercial, or had some other sort of zoning put on top of it, a different P district with standards, anything like that would have worked. But since it didn't, it is in the zoning map as a P district, but it does not carry the same entitlements to the design standards or any sort of just real entitlements to the property. So for anything to be built here, it would require either a rezone or some form of development agreement approval. Now, Ivory Homes has come through and submitted an application for what they're calling Amberlea Place. It's a 16 lot subdivision, all single family. The Foxborough neighborhood has 4 different zones that are subzones within the district. So there's R1, 4, 5, 6, and 7, and the lot sizes range from 4,000 to 7,000 square feet. So the R16 zone surrounds this particular lot. And I've provided a table for you guys on what the standards are in the R16 zone regarding the minimum lot size, depth, frontage, setbacks, and lot coverage. So we gave this to the applicant. We gave this to the applicant and said, be as close as you can. When we found out they were trying to do single family homes, we had a lot of people knocking down the door for walk-up apartments and townhomes, and we kept being like, if you want to try, that's great, but if not, that's fine too. But these folks, they came in wanting to do single family lots, and they actually were looking at doing about 18, and they reined it in just for their own purposes, which we appreciated because it brought them closer to what the R16 zone allows. So all of the lots really exceed what the R16 zone around it has for standards, except for 5 lots on North Fork Drive. And we'll show you in a minute what that looks like. There's not a real noticeable difference. And in the public hearing notice I sent out, I did do an overlay of what they're proposing on top of this map. So you can get a real idea of what those lot sizes look like in relation to the surrounding neighborhood. So the standard lot size in the R16 zone is 6,000 square feet. The smallest lot in this proposed subdivision is 5,570 square feet. The minimum width, so that's measured at the setback line, and that is how wide the lot is 60 feet in the R16 zone, and their minimum width is 58. So there's only a 2-foot difference there, not a huge difference in the lot size either. Regarding the setbacks, while she's pulling this back up, the minimum front yard setback in the R16 Foxborough zone is 20 feet. They are proposing a 20-foot setback, so there was no argument there. The minimum setback to the living space for the R16 zone is also 20 feet, or no, it's 15 feet, excuse me. So that's the idea of that is a porch or that type of thing could go into the front setback to make it less of a garage forward type of dwelling. Ivory's houses that they've already got in their catalog for this lot or these properties don't really need that requirement. So they just put 20 foot setback there as well. The minimum rear yard setback in the Foxborough zone is 15 feet, and Ivory has fought to ask for a minimum rear yard setback of 20 feet. We as staff don't necessarily agree with that. We think it should be consistent with the Foxborough zone of having a minimum of 15 feet. Even that doesn't mean that the developer comes in and they place the house as far back as they can. They have room in between, so if someone wanted a longer front yard with a longer driveway or something, they could squish it back and have a smaller backyard, vice versa, add a little versatility there. And also, just from lived experience, I have not heard a ton of complaints, if any, of the size of the backyards of the Foxborough neighborhood in this specific area. And actually, I run into problems where people want to put on a covered patio in the backyard or a deck, and they're unable to because the minimum setback is 15 feet. So I think increasing that to 20 feet, it doesn't mean it has to be squished all the way back, but it could allow the future residents more flexibility, and it's no different than what's already there. It is the oddest thing trying to tell a developer to ask for something smaller. That's not common. But we welcome feedback from the commission as well, especially those of you who are living in situations like this. The minimum side setback in the R16 zone is 5 feet, and the two sides when added together is 10 feet. These folks are proposing a minimum of 5 feet, but when added together, it's a total of 13. So the idea of this is a 5 and 8. We appreciate that because it makes it feel less cramped. And again, the lived experience of Foxborough, I think it's going to be a benefit. So this is one where we actually support the increase. And then they didn't note the max lot coverage. The max lot coverage in the R16 zone is 60%, and it's rare for those to be hit. So I'm not concerned at it at this point, and I think it's something we can delve into in the development agreement process. The remaining lots outside of those, thank you, Sherry. I just riffed without any of my plans, so I got to touch base. So as you can see here, all of the lots on the cul-de-sac and the one corner lot on North Folk and Amberley are all over 6,000 square feet. It's just the five along North Folk that is not the corner lot that are not meeting that requirement. And it's partially due to the curvature of the road. So I really don't think it's going to be a tangible difference for the lived experience of these residents. They are proposing a craftsman or farmhouse style house or architecture. They submitted a catalog. I think it's just one of their common ivory development garden style catalogs. And on these catalogs, I didn't include them because they still show basements, and these houses will not and cannot have basements along with all of the ones out in Foxborough. Traditional underground basements, that is. So the architectural style does complement what is around the neighborhood. I don't think it's too far off the mark of what we already see. We have ability through the development agreement to say things like it needs to complement, no potentially crazy colors, things like that if we want to, but the styles they're submitting are pretty consistent. So, and then as far as parking goes, because that's always the hot topic, even though these renderings don't show it, some, if not most, of their floor plans they've provided as options for these future residents have an optional third car garage. So if they're on one of the wider lots, or even if they have just a smaller floor plan of a house, they could potentially have three cars garages. In addition to that, the minimum they're going to have is a two-car standard garage with a driveway that is also a two-car, potentially room for like your RV pad or anything like that. So as far as parking goes, they are compliant. Our standard parking stall, as a reminder, is 9 feet by 18 feet, and their setback is 20 feet, so they're beyond that. And that is everything I wanted to touch on. I'm happy to field any questions, and then the developer has a representative here as well.
Thank you, Mackenzie. Let's just do any questions quickly from the commission before we open the public hearing, and then we can discuss further after we close the public hearing, just in case we can hit any of the questions that might come up from the public. So does anyone in the commission have any initial questions for Mackenzie or the representative?
Just the one thing I noticed, this Commissioner Stone, about the design of this is that the street is going the like an opposite way to all the other, the way the layout is already established. And I'm curious to know, I mean, I'm assuming some of these people are here for this hearing. So I'm curious to know how these residents feel about that. Because these homes on the north side would be the only homes on that street, like, facing that direction. And then, like, why not have homes? Do you know what I'm saying? So, like, the court, why isn't the court going from north to south? And then the homes facing, I'm assuming it's because it can fit more homes in this way?
We talked about this. Can you come up here to the mic and remind all of us, because I can't remember what the deciding factor was.
Greg Timothy, Ivory Development. We looked at
can you just state your name again? Sorry.
Sorry, Greg Timothy, Ivory Development. We looked at running that cul-de-sac north and south. We just feel like we got better lot fits on the third car garages running it this way rather than up, and that's pretty much how it shook out, because we got better lot fits with a third car garage on more lots going this way, because it was not a true rectangle with the curvature of that road. So that's the long story short with that.
So the orientation, it did not necessarily inhibit the property number. It was
not
just
the
dimensions,
the width, and
for
we
the
got
potential.
Better lot layouts with our product, with Ivory's product.
Right.
Yes.
So in theory, the Cali Court that you see to the south of this could be mirrored with the loss of potentially third car garages.
Yes.
And
yeah,
match.
We feel like we could go better lot fits for our product.
Great.
Possibly more third car garages.
Thank you.
You might want to hang up close because they might have more questions.
All right. Any other questions for the commission for either Mackenzie or Mr. Timothy before we open public hearing?
Commissioner Marsh, can you just restate what you were saying about the rear setback again about?
Yeah, because that Sherry might want to add into it too. She shares the same philosophy with me, so I'm actually going to defer to her and let her to explain it in a different way and see if it resonates differently.
So they're asking for us to set the standard of a minimum rear setback of 20 feet. All of the rest of the development, the minimum rear setback is 15 feet. For ease of us in administering it, we would prefer it be the same, only because that doesn't mean they're going to put the house 15 feet from the rear property line. It just leaves a little bit of extra room in case the homeowners in 5 years from now want to build on a covered patio, or they want to put a pergola on the back. If the setback is 20 feet, then they can only build that pergola up to that 20-foot line. If it's 15 and the house is set at 20 feet, they still have 5 more feet that they can put that pergola on or that covered patio. So it's not that they're going to move the houses any closer to the rear. It just gives room for a little more addition in the future for the future residents. I would suspect if we don't do it that future residents will come back to us and ask us for an amendment to that so that they have the same entitlement that all the rest of Foxborough has, that they can go within 15 feet of their rear property line.
That makes sense. Thank you.
Thanks, Sherry.
And from Ivory's perspective, is there any driving force behind that, or is it?
Sometimes it's hard when we come in and we ask for things. I mean, that's just what we do. And we're okay with the 15 feet, but it's like we rarely get cities saying, hey, you can get a smaller setback. So
we'll give you more.
It's kind of opposite of what typically we run to. So
I do have a question for you, Mr. Timothy. Do you intend to incorporate this lot into the HOA that surrounds this area?
Not necessarily. We don't have an HOA at the time. It's a public road, but that's not, okay. I think that's easier said than done a lot of the times with incorporating into HOA. We try to keep that separate.
Thank you. Yep. Any other questions at this point for?
I guess a little bit on the backyards. I know there's a Credit Karma commercial with a kid on a swing set. We like to give our homeowners a backyard so that they're not having a swing set hit the fence and give the homeowners an actual backyard. So that's our thought process there. We can go down to a 15-foot setback. That's not a problem. So
great. Yeah. Thank you. All right. If we don't have any other discussion right now from the commission, any other discussion? Okay. We will go ahead and open the public hearing. So if you are here to make a comment on this agenda item, now would be the time to come forward. If you will just state your name in the microphone for our meeting minutes, that would be very helpful. Thank you.
Good evening. My name's Robert Powell. I live on North Amberley, which is going to be right across the street from the development. And when we first bought our house 11 years ago, we were hoping they were going to build the church across the street, but we don't always get our way. Sometimes things happen, so we're fairly flexible. But obviously, we appreciate your efforts in making sure this wasn't a high-rise or some sort of walk-up or some sort of multi-apartment building. We would like to keep the neighborhood similar to what we are currently living in. So I hope that will continue, and that will be the plan. And we appreciate your efforts in that behalf. Secondly, I would like and hope that any houses built in this area are part of the HOA, because we have certain standards in the HOA that I'm in that I need to follow. I'd hate to look across the street and they are doing things differently. And, you know, maybe it's no big deal that their trash cans are out on the street or that they have cars parked in their yard or whatever. So just to maintain an even standard where everybody can expect the same kind of environment that we're currently in, it would be bad to just drop a whole housing section right in the middle of all the other housing and say the standards are different. So I'd like to keep the standards the same, and probably the way to do that is be part of the HOA. Secondly, one of the things that we've had to deal with across the street is it's an open field. and we get bugs out of there every year. We get rodents to come across the street, but most of the time they just stay there and mind their own business. We believe that as soon as you start disturbing that field, everything's going to come to the current housing area. They're going to come across the street to get away from any kind of development going on. So I'd like to encourage that if you're going to develop that area before you start tearing it up, that you do some sort of an abatement to maybe decrease the amount of bugs and things that are going to escape from that field and come over into the housing area. And somebody many years ago, I guess they had chickens, and when they left, they went to the field and dropped all the mealworms in that field. So every year or two, we get a horde of mealworms across the street and invade our house. It's just crazy. So I tend to think this is going to be a problem, and hopefully that they will be able to do something to abate that. The third thing is, for me, there are some other ones that I know people are going to bring up, but the third thing for me is my water pressure is average. There's nothing to get excited about. And I'm worried that unless they do something to accommodate these new homes, it's going to draw down on the water pressure that we're currently experiencing. And that's a problem for me. I already, like I said, the water pressure is average. It's sufficient, but I'm not sure how this would impact the water pressure, but I would imagine that it has to have some sort of effect on the water pressure. So I'm hoping that as this development goes forward, that's taken into consideration and that they assure that it doesn't negatively impact the current residents as far as water pressure goes. So thank you for your time.
Great. Mm-hmm. Thank you for your comments, Mr. Powell. We appreciate it.
Good evening. My name is Jeff Meyer. I'm currently serving as the president of the Foxborough North HOA. Appreciate the time to come here and address you guys, and just kind of give you guys a little bit of an update from some of the feedback I've heard from my community. First of all, we're really excited about Ivory Homes considering purchasing that lot and developing single family residences. I think we're all on board to welcome in, you know, that new, like a 16 home unit, you know, development into our community. A little bit of background, we have about 900 homes in the Foxborough North HOA, many of them belonging to the master HOA, which I oversee, but we also have four sub HOAs that are part of the community. If we were to bring them in, we would consider that given, as was mentioned earlier, the community standards. But I would also just say that, you know, one thing that's important to look at, I think maybe a question for Ivory to consider is, like, while the three-car garage may be a priority for them to give that flexibility for the owner, I think if we were to reorient the plat or the current proposal counterclockwise by 90 degrees, only putting those six units on the north on Amberley Drive instead of Norfolk, it would like help with the traffic flow, the parking, and pedestrian safety where there's currently no homes on Norfolk. And I've already received feedback from a lot of other neighbors saying that they really do not want to have driveways on Norfolk, just given the fact that our post office boxes are on the north side of Norfolk. And so you've got a post office truck often coming on that north side to put everyone's mail in. And that's on both sides of the Edelberg and at Amberley, you know, switch point roads. And so I guess that's the question of, like, how could the current design affect traffic flow, parking, pedestrian safety in the neighborhood? What plans are in place to ensure that the new development doesn't negatively impact the property values or the community cohesion? Aside from the aesthetics, you know, there's actually a pretty strong community we have with Foxborough North where we're doing community events two times a year. We do a lot of other things that through our social media campaigns and things that really try to bring that sense of community in. And I think that it's important that we can collaborate with Ivory Homes and possibly just kind of work towards an agreeable solution. Obviously, we don't want to make life difficult for them, and we'd be willing to negotiate what would make sense for them to come in by way of like an impact fee or a way that we can pull them in, because we do have some value there with two community pools, weight rooms, and some other amenities that they would have access to. And so I would just maybe give that to your consideration to consider analyzing how the layout might affect that overall community, and then how the development team might be willing to revisit the layout to address the community feedback that we're receiving and our HOA priorities. I would just also mention that the development plan should also account for the long-term maintenance and management in collaboration with us. We're trying to think about long-term planning as well, where we have another development coming in off of Redwood Road and 1100 North. They're not coming into the HOA, but they did ask if they could come. And then the determination was made that they would have their own separate community. And there's other reasons why, because of the high density units those would bring, we decided it would be best for us not to bring them in. But with this potential development, we really feel like with the aesthetics, really matching the surrounding area, with a lot of these people being in our ward or, you know, other kind of church communities and other things, we and a lot of people, I would say also, just another thing, living here 7 years, people move from one end of the community to another part of the community. So people in Foxborough kind of stay in Foxborough. There's actually a number of people who were in the Berkeley townhome area that have bought single family residences really nearby in these spots just like this. And so I would just say, like, if, you know, some of those home buyers are looking to just relocate within the community, it's likely that they'd still want access to the weight rooms, the pools, all of, you know, like the game room we have, the Amberley Clubhouse on 1080 North. And also I would just say, if there was a way that we could maybe continue the conversation with you as a planning commission, I think kind of with 900 homes, we're like a small city, small town with, you know, a regular board meetings and common feedback that we receive both in person and online with our social media accounts. And so that's probably just some things I would throw out there for you guys to consider as you consider to make this plan and continue the conversation. And I just say thank you for your time and appreciate being here. Thank you.
Great, thank you, Mr. Myers.
I am Lisa Thompson and I live on Alberg Drive. We came with a little bit of a different proposal ourselves tonight. We're excited they're single level homes, and we're really glad that they're not, you know, high rises and townhomes and multifamily kind of situation. Our concern was the parking. It is huge, and that is a very narrow street. It's got children quite frequently, and that just seemed like an overabundance of homes for that lot. And so our suggestion was going to be to take out those six homes and leave that to be park area for the children that would be coming in, as well as the ones that already reside there. But in listening to other comments, reorienting it would make it a lot better. It would not be as crowded, and putting that traffic elsewhere off that street would be more amenable. I agree with the water problem. I hope that's an issue that's not left unheard. I lost my train of thought. Oh, the HOA. I don't think it's right to bring a community in and drop it in the middle of two communities that are HOAs. That's just not right. It's not fair. It's not equitable. And we plead for that to be equitable. If they're going to drop in the middle of our community, they should be a part of the community in that aspect. And so I'm echoing their comments. Thank you.
Great. Thank you for being here, Ms. Thompson.
Hello, I am Brittany Booth, and I live on 947 Elizabeth Drive, so pretty close to where this development is. And I just wanted to echo the concern. I very much appreciate the developer coming in and making such an effort to stay consistent with the directly adjacent lots and housing, but I am concerned about the layout and with the homes being on Norfolk Drive. That was never a part of the plan to have homes on that. I think it was deliberately left so that there were no homes on Norfolk Drive. And so I would ask that, as you know, they finish off and join the community, that we find a way to do it where, again, like a mirror of Cali Court would be great, something that is much more consistent with the current layout and design of the neighborhood, both as it was originally and as it has been for many, many years. I've been a resident of Foxborough for 17 years. So, I wanted to echo that concern so that you know that that is something that is a concern for this. Thank you.
Great. Thank you, Ms. Booth.
Hello, my name is Gail Groves, and I live on the I'm on the northeast corner of Edelberg and Norfolk. and I just want to echo my deep, deep concern about the parking there. My sister lives in a similar situation where she's the last house on the street, and with six homes on that north side, there is never enough parking, and that road is so narrow. And as has already been mentioned, there are post office boxes there, but I know that the parking will constantly be a problem because there's never enough parking. And once those homes are built, I believe that they'll be parked all along Norfolk. Now, the North Salt Lake requirements for winter, you know, if there's a storm coming, says that people can't park there. And I understand that. But I can see parking completely along that north side as well as right in front of the homes all along there. And I do believe that the parking will drift across to Amberley Drive onto the east side where there are not homes, where they would butt up against the townhomes. So that's my deep, deep concern right now. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Groves. Any other comments from the public?
D. Lalas, you all know me anyway. In looking at this, there have been a couple of suggestions about mirroring the one on the south side there and turning it over. Counting that, they would add three more homes to that. Also on the street to the east, all those people would be backing out onto that street. I see their concerns on the north side of backing out into that. But I also see that the lots, if they were to mirror the ones on the south, would be smaller lots. They would be less deep and there'd be not as much space there. That's just a comment from looking at it. When I looked at it before, I thought, yeah, those people that are on the north side there are going to have problems backing out. People complain about parking. I think that they're talking about their HOA. HOAs say that people are not to be parking on the street, that they're supposed to be parking in their garage and driveway. And I've never understood why people complain about, well, there's going to be too much parking, and yet they don't observe it themselves. They park on the street. They block them off. You've got four parking spaces. Park in them. But that's just a comment. The other thing is, when I looked at this, my question, I have about three questions that have to do with, are they going to put in one or two pedestals for the post office, for the postal delivery? Where are they going to put them? And if they do that, I would suggest that in the turnaround cul-de-sac there, that they put them on the north side of the road, on the east side of, or on the west side of the road there, so that the mail truck turns in and empties the mail, not on the main street there, but in their street. The second question I have, what are they going to do with their garbage? Are they going to have garbage cans that they stick out? Are they going to have some place to pick them up? Is that turnaround at the end of it big enough that the garbage truck doesn't have to turn five times to get around there? And the third one is, when you're pushing snow, and I presume this will become a public street, where are they going to push the snow to? Because if you look at those two west lots there, both of them have the snow receiving place basically where their driveways are going to be. And I have a property that's on a cul-de-sac like that, and I have to go out every time it snows with my four-wheeler and push the snow out of my driveway because the snow plows are going to push it right up there. And so my question is, what's their plan for snow and how they're going to handle the garbage? But other than that, I think that either way you put it, if you turn it the other way, you're going to increase by about three lots. If you leave it the way it is, you're going to have people backing out onto the street to the north, and you'll have less parking on the street to the east. Thanks.
Thank you, Dee. Any other comments from the public? If not, we will close the public hearing and to the discussion between the commission. We can start with commission thoughts of the rear setback from 20 to 15. Any thoughts on that?
Hearing no objections from the developer, 15 seems the way to go, no matter the orientation.
Yeah, I feel like staying consistent with what the rest of the zone is feels like the best option there.
Great. And then discussion about the orientation of the lot.
Commissioner Holbrook, it would seem that the developer is in a bit of a catch-22. As I look at it, I also envision it turn 90 degrees. But we've also heard a lot of comments from the public over parking. And this orientation allowing for more three-car garages, therefore potentially six parking spots per lot, is what is going to mitigate the parking issue. So I see a bit of a rock and a hard place based on public comment of we want to lessen a parking burden, but that also requires six houses along Norfolk.
No, it's the public comment is closed, and so the discussion among the commission can address that. Unless Sherry, did you have something you wanted to add with that?
I mean, the only thing I would say is it's probably sixes if you really think about it. It's either six lots on Norfolk or six lots on Amberley. You already have driveways right across the street on Amberley and parking that's on that side of the street at the very least. So now you're going to have parking on both sides of the street if people have people come and visit their, you know, and park in front of them. On Norfolk, there's not houses or driveways across the street, so that would be a better place to have the driveways come out. It actually would slow down traffic. It would make it could possibly make it a little safer. Now, I haven't evaluated. I'm not a traffic engineer. I'm not the city engineer. But there are trade-offs, right? So there's either more parking on Amberley or there's more parking on Norfolk. One of those two things. The law doesn't change as far as where the post office boxes are. You can't park within 15 feet. Or I think it's 15 feet on either side of a post office, a mailbox or gang box. So there are things that still apply.
Yeah.
As far as that goes. The snow plowing issue, there could be snow easements right there at the end of that cul-de-sac. I know snow plowing can be a big issue. I think we have less an issue on the west side than we do, obviously, up on the hillside for the snow storage. At least with climate change, I don't know. We'll see how that works out. But they seem to be working out pretty well in the rest of the development. So I don't really think there's an answer to that. I personally think this layout's better because you get a little wider houses. That's one of the things that I've noticed in Foxborough is that the houses are very close together with the 5-foot side setbacks. It makes the houses 10 feet apart. They're proposing to make sure all the houses are at least 13 feet apart with their 5 and 8 foot setbacks. That also allows them to do some of the lots with three car garages, which is a benefit to the values in the neighborhood as well as to those residents. As far as any of the other things, I think it would be really great if they became part of the HOA. Mm-hmm. I think that they're very right that the customers that buy these houses are probably going to come from Foxborough, a lot of them, and they're going to want to be a part of that HOA. So if they can work that out, I'm not sure that we can legally require that. I think that we could encourage them to do that. I would have to consult with the city attorney, and I wouldn't want to get in a position where we were doing something that violated state law. So
that's what I was going to say. I also agree, but I don't think we can make that a condition or part of the development agreement.
I would strongly encourage them to work on that because I think it's a selling point when they go to sell these houses that they'll be able to be part of the HOA, that they'll have access to the community pools and the community meeting center and the community gym, weight room.
The street that is to the south of Norfolk, what is the name of that street that's that meets up with Cali Court? You'd think I'd know because I live right there. Is it 900?
Yeah.
I know. 900 it's embarrassing, north. You guys. Okay, so part of the parking issue, I think the fear that is coming up is that 900 North did have a parking issue, and then the city red-striped the north side, and that mitigated that parking issue. That parking issue I don't see coming in onto Norfolk because it does not have the same, it matches the area, and there is not really any overflow parking happening in any of these streets that I'm witnessing, and I also live truly right here. And so I don't see any overflow happening in Norfolk, and I would assume that this circle would, for the most part, contain its own parking in the same way that Cali Court does and Rothbury Court does and Newham Court does. And so I know that that fear is there because 900 North is a main thoroughfare, and it has had intense parking overflow that has been nicely mitigated with the red stripe on the north side. So also speaking to that these are single-family homes that aren't next to the Stonehaven homes are also very well established with their parking patterns and things like that. And so I don't see parking being a major issue here other than the people like having a third car garage, and that does help keep cars off of the road. So that would be a point in keeping the orientation this direction. I do also see the benefit and the point of matching what was the master plan for this neighborhood, which was Norfolk not having house fronting on it. Is Norfolk the same width as 900 North? So when people are addressing feeling like this street is very narrow, is it any more narrow than any of the other streets in there?
Not to my knowledge. Okay. I think they're all the same, but I am not going to say that with 100% certainty.
I mean, that is also my lived experience driving them, is that it's not any more narrow than any of these other streets that do have parking occasionally.
900 North could possibly be
that
a
one
little
be
bit
bigger.
Wider because it is a major collector that goes all the way from Redwood Road over to
I should have said
Elementary,
like Amberley Drive or one of the other, because
but for all the other streets in it should, these are the exact same.
Right. That is what I would think is happening there too. Any other comments on the orientation?
So I think it'd be interesting to know just the developer's reaction to, I mean, the comment, we talked about it earlier, but part of the public comment about, you know, the 90-degree rotation. I guess the nice thing is we're not 180 degrees apart, just 90, but in terms of some of the public input. I'm just curious what the reaction is to, you know, how strongly they feel about this orientation versus the other. We heard about the garages, and there do seem to be some advantages there with three-car garages. And then also the HOA. I'm just curious if there's an initial reaction and whether there's any feasibility in exploring alternatives, or if this is really what they want and they're pretty solid on that. Also, Sherry, a question for you in terms of, this is a little different than a normal R16 because it would be subject to development agreement. Where does the pro forma for that come from? Where do you have something similar that you would use, and how much detail does it get into if you decided there was some compelling reason to, you know, specify some detail? I'm going to pick something, mailbox location or whatever, but can you just talk a little bit about the development agreement?
So we will do a very similar development agreement to the one that governs Foxborough development. So the same types of regulations are going to apply. You can't have basements. You have to have this architectural style that they've specified. They'll need to identify these styles, and they won't be able to vary from them as far as the colors. We can negotiate the colors and into the development agreement. So it would be just like any of the other development agreements we've done. It'll be smaller because this is a really small development. I mean, 16 lots is much smaller than the 900 lots that were done, you know, when Foxborough was first approved. But it would be very similar to the same land uses as far as, you know, home occupations and the outbuildings and all of those same rules.
But there is some flexibility in terms of, there was a really important point that's not embedded in the code, you can negotiate that and potentially get it included.
Yeah, if there was a life safety issue or some sort of aesthetic issue, we could negotiate that. Yes, that would be within our purview. But obviously the developer has to agree. So a development agreement is a two-way street, right? Like they can they can ask for something and we can say no, and we can ask for something and they can say no, and we have to come to some sort of an agreement at the end of the day. I want to just say that I really appreciate that they came in and wanted to match the same sizes of lots and the same style of homes, because we have had, over the 9 years that I've been here, how many developers have called me about this who are interested in that property, and we want to do townhomes or we want to do walk-up apartments, and we were like, oh my gosh, no. And then we heard they were selling it for sure, and we had numerous, at least a dozen different developers call us to find out, doing their due diligence on their offers they were going to put on the property. And the ideas that some of them came up with, we were just like, oh my gosh, please, I hope they don't get the contract. And we were really glad that the property owner chose this developer in, and that this developer was willing to match the neighborhood and wants to be a part of the community. So
yeah, I appreciate that. And having driven down there, I was impressed by the neighborhood you all live in. Very nice. And I really like the little park on the corner.
And I was really glad that we weren't going to have to do code enforcement on this property anymore for the weeds when they got so tall, and we'd have to track somebody down at the church to get them to come and take care of that. So I hope that I'm not familiar with the what kind of abatement can be done for the mealworm infestation or any of the rodents, but I'm sure that's something that they can look at the very least. And hopefully this will at least take care of it for the permanent. We'll get rid of those types of things and the problems that we've been having with this over the years. And I did want to comment, one of the reasons, my understanding for the church not wanting to build a church there, was since they went to the 2-hour format instead of the 3-hour format on Sundays, that they could fit more wards in each ward house, so they didn't need as many churches.
Thanks, Sherry. I would be interested in seeing this done with the alternative layout, because I feel like the cohesion in the neighborhood long range matters. I would like to see the street front matching what is happening already in Norfolk and was planned for this neighborhood. So I personally would be interested in seeing it turned and see what that looks like. I also think the lived feel of not having six houses right up in your backyard like that is a preferable lived feel. I value a third car garage, but I also value accessible housing prices, and not everybody is looking for a third car garage. A lot of people are looking to break into the housing market and don't need a two car garage. So I don't necessarily think that the lack of two car garage lots is necessarily a disadvantage, other than financially it makes it less monetizable. But I feel like, as far as like long range looking, long planning for this neighborhood, having the orientation of this match what is already laid out and the flow would be advantageous for the people that live immediately around here, and also the lived experience of being in these backyards that then if you twist it, there's not quite as many people bumped up into your backyard and into your backyard space. That is my input on that, and if it's not a huge burden to the developer, that is something that I would like to see worked out, engineered, and see how that would look, having those six houses be fronted on Amberley instead.
Yeah, and to Commissioner Jorgensen's point, you know, we have the developer here. Is that, are you flipping tables, or are you regarding that and the HOA?
Yeah, that'd be great.
Just to clarify the HOA, we're not opposed to joining the HOA. I'll give you my card. We can talk after. Yeah, we can try to figure something out if we try to come to agreement. I don't know if that's necessarily the city's can force the issue on us joining the HOA or not, but we try to work something out. As far as the roadway, flipping it, we looked at sewer was an option that we looked at, the way that sewer, like we looked into the engineering, some of the way that it comes down on Norfolk, there is a storm drain there that actually goes to nowhere. So we would have to tear up and go back down through by the park and come down to tie into a, it was more evasive. You can see that yellow line up above. Honestly, that storm drain, that box goes to nowhere. That probably would have been when the church would have developed, they would have some sort of on property storm drain detention basin, but it didn't get developed that way. So we looked at that. We looked at different sewers, and we'd have six cuts out onto Amberley. We thought that being a north and south road, that's more traffic that would probably be coming through there other than Northfolk, because it's more dead end where it dead ends into Amberley. We thought that those six lots that would hit that lower price point could go there. That was kind of Ivory's thinking. That was our thinking when we went through to try to engineer some of this. Now, these aren't complete plans. These are pretty conceptual, but there was some survey that went into it. So I think they're fairly complete, if that makes sense.
Great. Thank you, Mr. Timothy. Yep. Sherry or Mackenzie, is there a option to look into possibly red striping one side of Norfolk if this orientation stays this direction?
There's certainly the ability. The way that would happen is it would have to be built first, and then we would, if we saw that there was a problem, we would take it to the safety committee, and they would determine if that was the best course of action to deal with the problem, if it was striping it or if it was just posting it. But that would be the process for that. We don't proactively stripe it in case there might be a problem. We'll see if there's a problem, and then we would address it.
Okay, great. Thank you, Sherry.
And we will address some of the issues with the street trees in this development agreement too, because that's a problem.
Yeah. All right, and then it's nice to have the HOA president here actively saying they're interested in that. We had the development on Cutler Drive that we tried to integrate into the Stonehaven HOA there, and it was problematic. And now those residents have also lamented that they now cannot join that HOA. So I also would strongly encourage a partnership between these, because that Cutler Drive property, initially it was like, well, you have to get a quorum, and I know, Mr. Myers, you know how tricky that can be, and have the HOA incorporate them, and it is a big job and it is a headache, but long range, it is definitely going to be the best thing for the neighborhood and for these residents to be fully incorporated into that neighborhood, and the benefits that Foxborough offers, which is many, and the small little pockets that have developed post HOA, they feel it. They feel that being like pocketed out. And so I also would strongly encourage that. And thank you for being here to advocate for that. Any other discussion with the commission?
Sherry, Commissioner Marsh, sorry, that was loud. Just curious if there was, as part of TRC, did the traffic engineer, anyone look at the difference between what a church would be versus these single family homes?
So
in terms
not,
of impact on traffic and parking and all that, because
yeah. So maybe I should just back up a little bit and explain the process. So this is the concept plan. This is what the initial layout is, the number of lots, kind of looking at the general development plan, what kind of houses are they going to put in it. So we would go from this process with the concept plan, then to the city council. They'll approve the concept, basically the general development plan. Then we negotiate, then that's when we start with the formation of the development agreement. Then they apply for preliminary plat, which is where all of the engineering comes in. And that's when we would require the traffic studies, or if they were warranted, or we might look at those comparisons. So you could think of, yes, a single family home's going to generate each home about 10 vehicle trips per day. So on Monday through Saturday, they're gonna have more trips than a church, but on Sunday, a church would have more trips. So
sure,
they're not
and
really
if there
comparable.
Were nightly activities at the church and so on, you're gonna get some additional traffic impact there. Not as much on Sunday, but.
Yeah, you might have more impact for the events that go on at the churches when they have wedding receptions or funerals, things like that, depending on how much parking they had. But it is very difficult to compare apples to oranges on.
Because you would
like
likely have access on both sides. You'd have Norfolk access and Amberley access.
Exactly.
Into that parking lot, if it were to exist.
Yeah.
This is Commissioner Stone. Can I just express my feelings on this? Okay. I feel really, like, as you were saying, really fortunate that this developer's come in and wants to do single family homes. I think that that's a really fortunate thing that's happening right here, because I do think what I've seen being on Planning Commission, it is apartments, it is townhomes, it's a lot of multifamily housing. So I think this is a really, really fortunate thing happening.
I do think, I don't know if this is just like, because we're seeing aerial view aesthetically, it does, I do think if I had a preference, I would say flip it so that the cul-de-sac is going north and south, flip it so that those houses are facing, what street is that? Amberley instead of Norfolk. However, if that's a make or break, and then it's like, we can't make that work, and then we have to deal with maybe apartments coming in here, I would much rather keep this than have that situation happening. So that's kind of where I feel, you know, torn, I guess, where it's like, this is it just like, because it also is, it's not just like, we're not looking at this at an aerial view normally, right? Like we're driving through, we're, and I do think it is important to think of the function of how this is working. And what you were saying about parking, I kind of agree with you on parking. Like, I don't see potentially this being a terribly, terribly problematic for parking. I do think like the flow of things and the way it's laid out is obviously not extremely consistent with what it is, but is that going to disrupt the function of that neighborhood very much? I don't know, you know? And what would disrupt the function of the neighborhood is apartments or, you know, and that is where what we don't want. So it's really tricky to kind of, I don't know, that's how I'm feeling.
There's the same amount of curbage for people to park on in either direction.
Right, but if it's like, would it cut down on the number of lots and then therefore not make it feasible for this developer to do it? That's what I'm wondering.
Right. And also with the aerial view, there are some areas in the neighborhood where the circle goes to the west like this, and it doesn't, personally, I don't feel like it functionally feels problematic. Ethne Court.
Right. Here it's a very like cut view of what we're seeing. But if you go to the other side of Foxborough, there's lots of windy streets and nothing is really symmetrical on the other side. And I don't think that that cuts down on its function, you know? So I don't know. I feel like I do think if it's possible to see what it would look like the other way, like why not? But I also
not
think
a deal breaker.
Right. I also think I don't want that to be the deal breaker
to lose the project.
Right. That if by flipping it now you have fewer lots or smaller lots and now it doesn't pencil out, then
correct.
Then it doesn't, then it doesn't get built.
I don't think it's worth it to lose the project, you know.
Right. Thank you.
That's how I feel.
Thank you, Commissioner Stone. Any other input? Mr. Timothy, is there any other things that the commission can offer to you to help you moving forward? Any questions or guidance that you would like from us to streamline this for you?
We work with a lot of different municipalities. I wish they were all as good as these two over here, to be honest with you. So they've been great. Answering questions, timely matter, it's gone smooth so far. As far as flipping it, I think that it's a worse plan, but that's just from what us looking at it. And I do think that there is a possibility of losing a lot if we were to flip it. Just looking at it, there's less three-car garages. It gives us less variety. So that's kind of where we were. We felt like this was a sweet spot without too much ask and being able to fit in with the neighborhood as best as possible. So thank you, guys.
Thank you for your time.
You.
Thank you. And if anybody's ready, we can move towards a motion or we can continue discussion.
Commissioner Holbrook, I move that the Planning Commission recommends approval to the City Council of the General Development Plan for Amberley Place subdivision located at 979 North Amberley Drive with the following conditions to be determined at the time of development agreement approval. 1, final architectural design. 2, final layout. 3, final engineering. 4, submittal of required development agreement.
Thank you, Commissioner Holbrook. Do we have a second?
Commissioner Marsh, second.
Thank you. Any comment on the motion? All in favor say aye.
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 Thank you. Any opposed?
Commissioner Jorgensen, opposed.
Opposed. All right. So that puts us at, 6-1, and the motion carries. All right. Thank you, public, for being here. I hope everybody feels builded. Oh, yeah. that everybody feels heard, that the developer is here and will take this public hearing in mind as they move forward. There will be another meeting about this. This just helps kind of get an idea of how this will move forward and makes it the most time effective for them to have the input early on in the development here. And then also understanding the way that the public hearing works, I hope you know that your input is still very valuable, but there's some just meeting rules that we follow when we close a public hearing just for accessibility to everybody and this and that. So I hope everybody feels heard and valued. We really do value when the public comes and gives their input. It helps us make these neighborhoods and plans long range in a way that works best for the developer and also works best for the residents and everybody around that, which is the job of the Planning Commission to try and balance those two needs. So thank you for being here. We will move on to agenda item number 5, public hearing consideration of a plat amendment to combine lots 1331 and 1332 at Eaglewood Cove subdivision. We have Mr. Arlington as the applicant. Do we have an applicant or representative here?
I don't know. Do we have, no?
If not, we'll just move forward with Mackenzie.
I want to say thanks to all the Foxborough residents that came. We appreciate you.
Okay. Thank you, guys. Yet again, Eaglewood Cove 13 has these massive lots, and someone wants to combine two of them. They have submitted a application to combine lots 1331 and 1332 of the Eaglewood Cove subdivision. That is at 592 South Tanglewood Loop. Here's an aerial view of the lots. This zone is R112, as you guys know, single family homes. The building permits I've been approving have hung around 10,000 square feet up here, so they are pretty decent sized. This particular plat amendment will not only combine these two lots, but vacate a 7-foot wide drainage easement that runs along the shared property line. I have confirmed with our city engineer that that drainage easement is not currently being used, and it won't be needed if these lots are combined and a house straddles that property line, essentially. So we had no qualms vacating it from our side. We did give a public notice to all of the affected entities per state code. We received no comments or no disagreements with this proposed vacation. And then it's important to note that for the amended lot 1331A, is what we're calling it, the same requirements for the subdivision and extensive plat notes, if you recall those, will carry through on this particular lot. Thank you, Sherry. And then the only other item to note here is in this subdivision, we do have the building envelopes based on the topography and geologic hazards in the area. We are able to amend a building envelope no more than 10% upon approval from the community development director in support of the city engineer. This does not happen often. And in this particular situation, the only amendment to the building envelope is crossing that shared property line and making one cohesive building lot. The building envelope in this situation was not based on topography or any hazards. It was based on the setbacks. So there are no issues there, and they are not extending the building envelope in any other direction. I am happy to field any questions you have.
Thank you. Any questions from the commission? And if not, we will open the public hearing. Any comments from the public?
Oh, my goodness.
D.
D. Lawless, if you're going to have a public hearing, you ought to have somebody from public hearing. as I looked at this before, that easement down the middle there was basically on a fence line to prevent people going across it. But if it's a single piece of property, then it has to do with the building envelope and where you can put the building. Because if you have to fill that thing with 15 feet of fill dirt, and it's going to cause a problem in their backyard, then they're probably not going to do it. But as far as looking at it and say, why is it there? It was there because there's a little valley there. And if I own the whole property, then I'm going to do it as I need to do it. So the public says, okay.
Thank you, Dee. All right, and we will close the public hearing and move to commission discussion or a motion.
And I just want to make one comment. We've seen the plans for this house, and it's freaking spectacular.
I noticed the applicant was Upwall Design, and they built some of the most beautiful things in
crazy
Utah.
Crazy beautiful house. We want to see
it. And it's,
send it in an email.
I can't, but if you want to come look at it after the meeting.
Well, we're going to go on a field trip next year.
It's going to be beautiful. I'm like blown away.
And I forgot to mention the DRC did recommend approval, and there are no engineering red lines. So once we get this over the hurdle of your approval on City Council, I can record it and it's good to go.
Okay, I'm going to make a motion. This is Commissioner Stone.
Can I just make a comment?
Oh, yeah, of course.
Thanks for hearing me here for a minute. But first off, it's a beautiful view. So it's going to be a beautiful home with a beautiful view. That's a nice area. I did have a question for Sherry, though. In the subdivision and the way that was approved, were there any restrictions that apply? Like, you know, we're seeing obviously firsthand like a worst case scenario in Los Angeles with what's going on, but obviously there's tons and tons of stands of oak brush throughout that area, that whole hillside up above the Kern River pipeline, and then there's stands that are intermixed there. But I'm trying to remember, were there wildland urban interface fire considerations like clearances and all that have been applied to all these?
Yes, there were. And then there's fire sprinkling. This house for sure will be fire sprinkled because it is over 10,000 square feet. And that was one of the requirements of the fire district, and it's also in state code. So that will happen. Luckily, we have different kind of terrain here. We don't have heavily forested, and there's easily ways to make defensible space on these properties than in California on some of those crazy lots, which is so unfortunate, but we are lucky that way. And we do have the requirements for the fire sprinkling. We don't have urban wildland interface, isn't adopted officially in the city. There is a bill with the legislature this year to make it mandatory for all cities to adopt that, which I think would be a great idea. Because I think it is important. There are other homes that are up against the oak brush. This one doesn't happen to be in that situation. It's actually one of the areas where they kind of had a knoll that had some questionable soils, and they went and regraded that and took that top off and then they had to take some of those questionable soils off the site or re-engineer those soils that are on the site. So it's been really denuded would be a good way to put it. But yeah, I mean, it's obviously something on our mind. It's something that's on the city council.
Well, I know we had, I think there was an notification of about, I'm sidetracking the discussion, I apologize, but there was a notification last summer about the evacuation zones. That's the first time I'd ever seen them, and that it took in all these areas and all that. So I do think, you know, there actually is designated evacuation zones. I happen to be out of it. But I do live by scenic easements that are full of oak brush. And I tell you, I have a brother-in-law who's a wildland firefighter. He does wooey stuff. He looks at it and he says, you guys are crazy to leave that stuff there. So even these stands of oak, that's a lot of fuel. Anyway, just to sidetrack it. So I apologize for the diversion. Thank you for answering my question. I do think this wildland urban interface, we haven't run it to ground. We've seen homes burn in Davis County any number of times. And you know, knock on wood, and we hope that doesn't happen. But I do think there's still more work to be done, including down in some of the gullies, you know, even where like the Spring Hill Geologic Park, we've got big stands of oak brush, and you know, are they 100 foot setback from that? And you know, if you have winds blowing, then that complicates the hot ash transport and all that stuff. So a lot to be done, I think, in that. But I tend to worry about those things way too much.
Well, you know, we have the there's a trade-off again, right? So the oak brush stabilizes the soil, but it also is a fire hazard. So we have to find the right mix of not destabilizing the soil, but also not causing increased fire hazards. So which natural disaster is worse, you know? And I'm not trying to be flippant about that. I'm just saying that really that is a consideration that we have to make. But I can tell you that it's on the forefront of the minds of the city council and the city management staff. And we, the city manager just sent out an email today to the city council and all the executive staff about an emergency preparedness plan. The leaders at the church have contacted us and want to have a meeting, and that's not the local leaders of the branches or the wards. That's actually the emergency preparedness for the entire, you know, the big wigs up in Salt Lake. And they want to make an effort into these hillside communities to help us get our emergency plans and evacuation plans and our make sure that we're all on point and know what to do in the event there was an emergency. So it is on their mind, and we're going to be starting work to that towards that. So
thank you.
Okay, this is Commissioner Stone. I'm going to make a motion. I move that Planning Commission recommend to the City Council approval of the plat amendment for Eaglewood Cove Subdivision Phase 13, vacating a drainage easement and combining lots 1331 and 1332, located at 592 South Tanglewood Loop, with no conditions.
Thank you, Commissioner Stone. And a second?
Commissioner Marsh, second.
Thank you. Any comment or discussion on the motion? All in favor, say aye.
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 Aye. Aye.
Thank you. And any opposed? And the motion carries. All right, we will move to agenda item 6, public hearing, consideration of an amendment repealing City Code section 10-2-3. Sherry.
This should be the easiest item on your agenda tonight. So the City Council has come to a decision that the PTAR committee is just has too many things on their plate, and that with those plates would be better served if they were served by separate committees. So they have created a resolution to create a Trails and Access Transportation Committee, a Civic Event Committee, and an Arts Committee, and separate the PTAR. The one thing that they need to do is the ordinance that established the PTAR is in the land use ordinance. Not really sure why it was put in the land use ordinance, because that made it, in order to repeal it, it has to have a public hearing in front of the Planning Commission and a recommendation from the Planning Commission to repeal that. So the new committees are being formed by resolution so that that doesn't have to happen, but we still have to repeal this. So this entire section will be repealed in whole. There's not a lot of things that could be said about that. It'll just be repealed, and the City Council can then formally appoint the members to these three new communities. So, but it is a requirement of state code that anything in the land use code has to have a public hearing and recommendation from Planning Commission. So DRC is recommending that you recommend this.
Forget it. It's the only reason I was on the Planning Commission was to have a say in the PTAR committee.
That's right.
So if we say no, does the PTAR committee stay and they then make resolutions?
No, because it's still a recommendation, so the City Council can overrule you if you recommend to not repeal this ordinance.
I feel like we should just give a negative recommendation.
Yeah, then we have displeasure with let's just membering
of them. Let's just flex our legislative control here.
Well, thank you for cleaning up some of these things that are redundant. We appreciate that moving forward. We will open the public hearing for you,
Dee.
Oh,
here we go, Dee.
Dee Lalas, the public supports the City Council in breaking up and removing the PTAR committee and making it three committees out there. I've sat in on a lot of the meetings on it, and I think that it's a great idea. I think that the way that it was constructed at first was thinking in a very small town, and now that we've expanded, there are too many events, too many different things that the committee had subcommittees anyway, and so it's a good plan, and I support the City Council in doing this and getting rid of this one.
Thank you. All right, we will close the public hearing, and we can move to a discussion or a motion.
Commissioner Jorgensen, I'll offer a motion that the Planning Commission recommend to the City Council the approval of the proposed amendment to the Land Use Code repealing Section 10-2-3, Parks, Trails, Arts, and Recreation Board, with no condition and the following findings. One, the proposed amendment is in accord with the general plan goals and policies of the city. Two, changed or changing conditions make the proposed amendment reasonably necessary to carry out the purposes stated in this title.
Thank you, Commissioner Jorgensen. And do we have a second?
I'll second. Commissioner Tucker.
Thank you. Any discussion or comment on the motion? All in favor say aye.
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 And any opposed? And it passes.
I thought you were all opposed a minute ago.
And it passes.
I wanted to be the contrarian.
You already got your one.
All right. We will move to agenda item 7, work session.
Okay. We're going to kind of keep this a little bit maybe short and sweet on this one and give you a homework assignment. So we felt like 4 public hearings and 1 planning commission meeting would be too many to have a public hearing on this particular ordinance, which is probably for the best anyway, because I wasn't quite done with it. So what I have done here that is being passed out to you is I now have compressed the uses down into a lot fewer. Still, there's a lot of lines there, but some of these lines are in italicized under each unit, under each land use, which are notes for myself as I now work towards getting the standards for each one of these uses drawn up. And so what we would like to ask from the commission is that you review this list and make sure that I've gotten your recommendations correct as far as whether that should be something that be non-permitted or permitted. There are a few categories that I do want to just point out that I think we still need to think about a little bit. I know the goal was to get as many uses as permitted as possible, but there were certain uses that I felt very strongly should probably still remain conditional uses, and those are some of the heavier manufacturing uses, as well as like the sewer treatment plant and food recycling, those types of things. And so I would ask that you pay close attention to that. I'm still doing some more research on the social services things as far as the Fair Housing Act on a few of those things. And then I just want to make sure I've touched on all of those things. And point out on the warehousing section, what I have done is I actually have created the wholesale and warehousing section. So that's down in section 19 on the last 4 pages. I've created some of those uses that are permitted and some of those uses are conditional just because of the nature of what they would be, wholesaling and warehousing on property. And I feel like that's something that we need to be able to still address with the applicant and I guess use some gravitas when we're going through the conditional use permit to tell them how serious we are about the conditions that we're putting on them, because they include outdoor storage or they might include activities that might produce odor, or they're storing chemicals or some other thing like that that might be something we want to address. And then I have the prohibited wholesale uses as well. And I think that's actually where I put the chemicals at. So I just wanted to point that out to you, because I know we were talking about trying to get everything into being a permitted use. But I felt like some things like the refinery should stay a conditional use. The sewer treatment plant, the food recycling should remain conditional. Some of the heavy equipment that would require outdoor storage to remain conditional, those types of things. And then as you go through this, if you think of conditions that we should be placing on these, to note them on your papers and send that back to us, and we will add them if we didn't already think of them as we go through this in the next 2 weeks. But we will have this ready for you 2 weeks from today to have a public hearing so that we can get it into the City Council in February. But this is where we're at this point. Also, if you see things where I've just included too many things, because on the wholesale trade, what I did is just group everything that were the same peas in all the same zones and put them and put bullet points as these are the types of uses that are those. If you see anything in there that you think needs to be prohibited or something I've left out that we haven't thought of, then certainly I would note that and we can discuss it in 2 weeks. And I'm happy to send you an electronic version if that helps you, so that you can mark it up, those of you that want it. Some of you like paper, some of you would maybe want to do it on a computer.
Great, thank you. And then report on City Council.
So we haven't had any, I mean, we had our first meeting of the year. They approved the schedule for Planning Commission and City Council. And at their last council meeting, they had a training for the Open and Public Meetings Act, which is required annually. And the city recorder is going to come next time on the 28th and take about 15 minutes at the beginning of your meeting to do the annual training for you guys. She does it really a fun way and does a little, what's that called? A little game like that you game, get to log in.
That was fun. Yeah, and we got cookies.
Cahoots or something. Wow. So practice. And they didn't say when she started the first time, because staff did it too, that it's also who logs in first gets more points. If you get the answer right and you got it in before other people, then you get more points. And I'm just sitting back there looking at it going, okay, well, I know what the answer is, but then I'm like casually just putting it in at the end, letting everybody, you know, and then I ended up like 9th out of 11 because I wasn't in any hurry. I was like, oh, I want to read the whole question, but sometimes you gotta have a better trigger finger. So I don't think I'd be very good on a game show. I don't have a good trigger finger as far as that goes. But that's the status update for the council.
Great. Thank you. And then approval of the minutes from December 10th. Any adjustments to the minutes? And if not, we can make a motion.
Commissioner Jorgensen, I make a motion that we approve the meeting minutes for the December 10th, 2024, December 10th, 2024 Planning Commission meeting is drafted.
Thank you. And a second?
Commissioner Marsh, second.
Great. Commissioner Marsh, and all in favor say aye.
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 Aye. Aye.
And we are adjourned. Woo-hoo. All right. Nice work, everybody.
Thanks, Bill.
Thanks, Bill.
See ya.